Welcome to 2819. I'm Sandra Dimas.
And I'm Brian Rollenbacher.
And we have a fun mix of topics for you today. A bunch of different things that are relating to kind of questions people have about their faith.
Yeah, that's right. They're almost not connected, but their faith connection is there. That's right. What's important.
Well, what do we have?
In RTB 101, Crystal will be interviewing biochemist Fuzzo Rana on what is transhumanism.
And in Give and Take, Jeff Swerink will be talking with philosopher and theologian Ken Samples on neighboring faiths. So talking about how we can engage people from various faith backgrounds.
Yeah, that one's going to be really good. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. First up is Culture Talk. Sandra will be interviewing Derry Seng, who is the regional director for Ratio Christi of the Pacific Northwest. That was a lot of words to put in
yes,
there.
And you I did hope it,
I said
buddy.
Her last name right too. But they're going to be talking about the college ministry she does, along with what are some of the commonly asked questions that college students are bringing up. Let's check that out.
Now it's time for Culture Talk. This is the segment where we talk about culturally relevant topics that you can use to start conversations about your faith. I am joined today with Derry Seng. Thank you so much for joining us today, Derry.
Thank you for having me, Sandra.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. So for our viewers, just so they know who you are the chapter director of Ratio Christi at Portland State, and you're also the regional director of Ratio Christi Pacific Northwest. So thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be talking about a partnership that we have with you, and that is Reasons to Believe, coming together with Ratio Christi Portland State chapter, for what's called the Identity Conference. So can you tell us about the Identity Conference and what that is?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. Reasons to Believe approached Ratio Christi and asked if we would like to partner on something that would be of interest to college students. And identity is on the forefront of college students' minds because there's so many conversations in the culture about that now. There's questions about gender and race and all different aspects of identity. And so this was a really important topic. And I was really thankful to be able to have this conference and share that with the views of Reasons to Believe, have them come in with their views as well as Ratio Christi and partner together and talk about this for the students.
I'm really excited. I think it'll be great. So I know your work with Ratio Christi, you're well-versed in working with college students and understanding kind of the questions that they have. What are you finding are some of the really common questions that college students are grappling with as they think about their identity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that for students who are following Christ, I think that they are asking, why is the Christian worldview better able to answer the question of identity than the secular worldview or even other worldviews? And how can they have conversations with their peers and sometimes even their professors about questions of identity and be able to have a good reason for the hope that they have based on identity and just that we are all made in the image of God and what that really means.
Right. So this conference, and it's going to have a bunch of different topics and themes. Can you share some of those topics that the speakers are going to be addressing?
Yeah, so we have three speakers for each of our two conferences that we'll be doing. And each speaker is going to bring their own story of identity to the conference and explain that about the way that they wrestled with some questions regarding their identity and the ways that God led them to discover who they really are and the kind of fundamental principles of that which come from the Christian worldview. So I'm really excited to hear the different stories that people have to tell. They're all unique and they're all beautiful, but they're all, very different. And so, coming at it from different struggles in their lives and just realizing who they are as people, like I said, made in God's image. So I'm really excited about that.
Right. Well, speaking of made in God's image, you're actually going to be talking specifically about being made in God's image. Your topic is on Imago Dei. Can you explain what you're going to be unpacking there?
Yeah, this is one of my passion areas. As I've watched the culture change and kind of watched the conversation that people are having about who they are and, you know, trying to identify themselves in a particular way, it's really struck me that this is one of the foundational teachings of Christianity. And it's something that we need to understand, and we need to help other people to understand it, because not just Christians are made in God's image, but everyone is. And, you know, we see that in the beginning of Genesis, that it's laid out very specifically there. And so I'm really passionate about helping people to discover that that is their essential identity, and that that's something that cannot change and will ever change.
I love that. And I really hope that in those conversations, as people are understanding that we're all made in God's image, that there's a deeper empathy and a deeper compassion for people of all different perspectives, that regardless of where they're coming from, that there's definitely a compassion there. So let's talk about those dates. What are the dates of this conference for those who are curious about jumping on?
Yeah, so the first date is April 17th. It's a Saturday, and it will be in the afternoon, I believe between about 1 and 3 p.m. And the second date will be May 15th, also at the same time, and also a Saturday. So hopefully that will be a time where people can, you know, not have to get up too early and kind of enjoy their weekend, but also get to spend a few hours talking about important issues.
And who are some of the speakers who are going to be joining for this conference?
Yes. So we have Hugh Ross. We also have Mary Jo Sharp and Clay Jones. I will be speaking at one of those. And we have also Andy Steiger. So we have a pretty good lineup, I think, of people who have completely different stories, but very compelling stories to tell. And so, yeah, I think it's a good mix of people.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I think people love stories. They're going to be excited to hear these many different stories at the Identity Conference. So if you would like to attend, go to reasons.org/events and look for the Identity Conference. Thank you again for joining us, Dari.
Thank you, Sandra.
Now it's time for RTB 101, where we discuss practical questions to equip you to share your faith more effectively. And here to help me talk about a very important topic when sharing our faith with scientifically minded friends is biochemist Dr. Fuzz Rana. Welcome, Fuzz.
Krista, thanks for having me.
I'm excited to talk about this topic today, kind of out there on the cutting edge, transhumanism. Now, you wrote an entire book with Ken Samples about transhumanism a couple years ago, Humans 2.0, and it's a topic that is continuing to grow in popularity. So maybe let's start with a definition. This might be new for some of our viewers. What is transhumanism?
Well, you know, Krista, in my experience, a lot of people have never heard of the term transhumanism, but they actually are pretty familiar with the concepts that are central to this idea. And namely, transhumanism, in a nutshell, is this notion that as scientists and technologists, we have a moral obligation to use science and technology to modify the biological makeup of human beings. And in doing so, correct our biological flaws, overcome our biological limitations. And the idea is that this will allow us to become stronger and smarter and more psychologically well-adjusted. And so people are using or looking to use technological advances to modify our biological makeup to really enhance human beings beyond our natural limits. And the hope here is that through this process, we could take control of our own evolution and really evolve human beings into a collection of post-human species that would be of our own making.
So in a way, I think I'm understanding now the title of your book, Humans 2.0, is kind of the next level of human evolution, if you will. So that makes me wonder then, why do you think this topic has become so popular with so many people? Do you think that there's a particular motivation behind it that has really caused people's interest to grow?
Yeah, well, you know, this idea of using technology to modify our biologies, to enhance our biology, isn't really anything new. In fact, some of the ideas that are central to transhumanism appear in the early 1900s. But most people regarded transhumanism as a fringe idea on the sidelines, on the margins of the academy until recently. And thanks to advances that are happening in things like gene editing and brain computer interfaces, which now actually give us the technology to do what transhumanists hope we could do, suddenly gives credibility to transhumanism. It's now really moved into the academic mainstream where credible scientists and technologists and philosophers are seriously entertaining a future where we literally modify our biological makeup with technologies.
So what would you say is the end goal then of the transhumanist movement in trying to kind of push the evolution of humanity forward? Like, where is this heading? Are they trying to help us overcome death? I mean, what do you think that they see as being the real long-term goal?
Many people that hold to the transhumanist view think that much of the pain and suffering that human beings experience is due to our flaws and our biological limitations. And so the hope is that by stepping in and correcting these with technology, we can mitigate pain and suffering and work our way towards a utopian type of future of our own creation. But ultimately, many transhumanists see the fundamental and the ultimate limitation that we face as human beings is our own mortality. And so they think that this technology can actually extend life expectancy, maybe even give us a practical type of immortality. So even though the ideas of transhumanism are intertwined with science and technology, at the end of the day, you could really think of transhumanism as really being a religious idea where transhumanism is an appeal to science and technology as the mode of our salvation.
So if that's the goal, I'm wondering then, are all transhumanists atheists? Are they? Is their goal then to try to almost effectively kind of take control of their own destiny? Or are there Christians involved in the transhumanist movement?
Many transhumanists are atheists, but there are some Christians who embrace transhumanism. But for an atheist, transhumanism is really very important because it forms a type of eschatology. Because think about this, if you hold to a materialistic view of the world, then ultimately each of us is going to die and our existence is going to come to an end. And the same would be true for all of humanity. And so there's a bleak future if you are an atheist, the materialist. But with transhumanism, suddenly now you infuse that worldview with hope, purpose, and destiny. And so for atheists, transhumanism really becomes a critical eschatology. For some Christians, they are looking to appropriate ideas of transhumanism and incorporate it into Christian theology, but it doesn't take on the same level of urgency and importance for Christians as it does for atheists.
So when we think about eschatology, or meaning end times, when we think about that, one thing we know from scripture is that the church will endure until Christ's coming. You know, that no matter what happens with transhumanism, Jesus will return to earth someday and find his faithful church here. But I'm wondering, what do you see as being maybe some approaches that we can engage with our people in our lives who might be looking into transhumanism? You know, like, what is the better hope that Christianity offers?
Yeah. Well, and again, it goes back to this idea that, you know, that transhumanism really at the end of the day is a religious idea. And so what is happening is that people that hold to a transhumanist view are seeking after the very same things that we're seeking after as Christians. They realize that the world is not the way that it should be, and they want to step in and do something to mitigate pain and suffering, to promote human flourishing. They desire a utopian future. But above all, they desire ultimately hope, purpose, and destiny. There's a desire to connect with that which is transcendent. And so these are really the same things that we hope for as Christians. And in fact, this is what the gospel offers. And so we need to be able to recognize that transhumanism is in effect a false gospel, and we need to be prepared to show why it is, and then how people can actually discover the true source of salvation in the person of Christ.
Well, thanks, Fuzz, for getting us a little bit more up to speed on this very important topic. I want to recommend people check out your book, again, Humans 2.0, and you can get that at reasons.org.
Hello, Jeff Zwerink. Welcome back to Give and Take, the segment of our show where we explore important scientific ideas and how they relate to the truth of Christianity. Today, I'm joined by Ken Samples, and we're going to discuss the importance of learning about others' faith so that we can talk with them well. Ken, it's good to have you here today.
Good to be with you, Jeff.
So, Ken, I know you have a friend who's written a book that you really like when talking about other faiths. What's the name of the book? How do you know this fellow? And just kind of give us a little bit of insight into the book.
Yeah, the title of the book is Neighboring Faiths, and it's written by Winfred Corjan. He was a professor for 30 years teaching philosophy, world religions. In fact, one of the very cool things, Jeff, he would take students overseas to actually, you know, talk with Buddhists and Hindus. I think that this book by Win Corjan is the very best Christian book addressing the world's religions. And I have dozens of those types of books on my bookshelf. This would be my number one on that topic.
So give us a little bit of just an overview of the different religions that he talks about in the book, and then we'll kind of talk about what do we do with that information.
Yeah, Corjan covers the waterfront. He not only addresses, Judaism and Islam, Buddhism and Hinduism, but he addresses Jainism, Sikhism, Shintoism, Taoism, Confucianism, and a special section he has on both the Native African and Native American religions. And I would add, Jeff, he has two chapters on Islam. One is their beliefs and all of those kinds of things. The second one is Islam in light of 9/11. So the political backdrop of that issue, which is worth the price of the book itself.
So it seems like it's a pretty exhaustive and extensive book that you'll be very well equipped by reading it. So let me ask this question. Why is it important for us to understand other religions? Isn't it more important that we just know what Christianity has to say?
Well, I think it's awfully important to know what Christianity has to say. But let me put it this way, Jeff. 50 years ago, if I wanted to talk with a Buddhist or a Hindu or a Confucianist, if I wanted to engage in a debate, I'd probably have to go overseas. All of that has completely changed. The internet has changed it. People have moved to America. So it's common in particularly America's urban centers. I mean, Los Angeles, it's one of the most diverse places, not only in the country, but in the world. You may have kids on your soccer team and they're a Buddhist family or a Hindu family. Because there is that kind of religious diversity, the projection is, Jeff, in the year 2050, there'll be 9 billion people living on planet Earth, 3 billion Christian, 3 billion Muslim, and 3 billion other, both religious and secular. Everywhere you go, you meet people who have different ideas, and we still live in a religious world.
You know, that's an interesting take on it, because I just remember back to when I was in college, about 30 years ago, and witnessing really amounted to, hey, do you know what the Bible has to say? Most people had a pretty good knowledge of what the Bible had to say. You were really kind of laying out the message of the Bible, if you will, but most people knew what the Bible had to say and had a trust for it. And it seems like we've now moved to a place where very few people know what the Bible is and has to say, and increasingly there's no trust of it. So it seems to kind of mirror that if we're going to be able to engage people well, we need to be better prepared ourselves. So how does this book help prepare you?
I think it does a really good job. Number one, Wynn is a Christian apologist, so he is committed to the truth of Christianity. But Jeff, he treats the religions the way he wants other people to treat his religion. But what I mean by that is what we talk about, the golden rule of apologetics. Wynn doesn't beat up on the religion. He tries to present them as clear and careful. I think he's even empathetic. He even recognizes that, look, people are coming from different points of view. They have different needs and different ideas. But I also think he does a very good job of showing the contrast between the Christian view of God versus the Islamic view of God versus the Hindu view of God. And I think that adds to that earlier question you asked. Certainly it's important to know what you believe and why you believe it. But if you understand basic ideas about the other religions, maybe they're key books, maybe they're key doctrines, that puts you in a position where I think you can be much more persuasive in sharing your faith.
You know, your discussion about the golden rule is kind of interesting because I'm not even entirely sure how many people would identify that as being scripturally based, to treat others the way you want to be treated. But I found that very important. It also seems to me there's an aspect of this that understanding different worldviews is important because you can be arguing about the same set of facts, but just interpreting them in very different ways. Does this book help you understand how to engage in dialogue in that fashion?
It really does. I mean, it talks about the basic worldview perspective. So a worldview would be your kind of big picture view of reality, your view of God, your view of the universe, view of ethics. I think having that big picture is very helpful. Wynn does a great job of doing that and explaining the distinctive elements. I mean, for example, in Hinduism, Jeff, you've got multiple beliefs. I mean, some Hindus believe in 330 million gods. Some believe the universe is God. And most, by the way, believe there's one God. So knowing those kind of things, and Wynn does a good job of setting them forth, I think that puts you in a position where you're confident to say, hey, I can have an honest discussion with somebody who comes from a very different point of view, philosophically speaking.
So as you've, I know you've read through this book probably multiple times, what is the one thing that you've learned or that you find most engaging about having read the book Neighboring Faiths by Wynn Corjin?
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in it. I think that the thing that impresses me the most, Jeff, is that, again, Corjin doesn't create a straw man argument. He doesn't go out of his way to try to get you, you know, I got you on this point. He respects where people are coming from. And I think if people in other religions read Wynn Corjin's book, they would say, yeah, I recognize my faith. Yeah, that is what I believe. I think the thing that impresses me the most is that I think he is very fair-minded in getting these religions accurately and truthfully.
Well, thanks very much, Ken. I appreciate your comments. You know, as Ken mentioned, that doing missionary work used to mean traveling across the world to find other cultures. But now those cultures are right where we live. And if we're going to engage with them well and be able to bring the gospel into those conversations in a way that people can hear, we're going to need to understand them. You know, I would encourage you to go to reasons.org and check out Ken's blog on this. It's called Neighboring Faiths, a review of Winfred Corjin's timeless book. It will help you understand what's in the book and also encourage you to get the book so that you can be well prepared to have those conversations that God will inevitably bring across your path.
That does it for us this week on 2019. We hope you enjoyed this episode and that it helped equip you to share your faith with confidence and compassion.
And we hope you'll check out the Identity Conference and also that, you know what, you'll find us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are at 2819 Show and we would love to hear from you. And also you can get some like sneak peek behind the scenes clips. So be sure to find us there.
Yeah, that's right. Especially on Instagram. Sometimes I have to like kind of, you know, record those, put them together. I usually don't know what I'm doing when I don't have a teleprompter. So
this guy, yeah. You know,
check it out for a good time. anyway, if you also want the podcast version 2019, you can get it on most major podcast services. Just search Reasons to Believe Podcast.
See you next week.
Bye.